All right, what is going on, everybody? It's your boy Big Dave Martell back with another episode of Boghammer 40K Live right here on DLive.tv/Dave Martell. I believe this is our third episode of Boghammer 40K, and tonight we have a very cool panel of experts of the 40K universe, and we're going to dig into some really, really great stuff and all kinds of depth into the lore and stuff like that. But before we get started, I want to give a shout out to our buddy, the Iron Age Jodish. Make sure you go to facebook.com/Iron Age Jodish to go get your Vedic astrology reading. Let me tell you, man, I am not a fan of New Agey, weird, goofy stuff. I've always thought horoscopes were goofy. I've always thought it was New Agey, box wine nonsense. He blew my mind. The knowledge of the ancient Vedics and their system of astrology is absolutely incredible. It'll blow your mind. So make sure to go over to facebook.com/Iron Age Jodish to get your reading, and make sure to tell them that Big Dave sent you. And then, meanwhile, we're moving up in the world. Make sure to go over to patreon.com/TheBog and go get signed up. You can get all kinds of tiers and levels of different things that you can get. I'm about to add merchandise there very, very soon in the coming days. So merchandise will be available. You can get your own Bog Lord t-shirt. You can get all kinds of crazy stuff. We got some designs in the works that you guys are going to love. But if you want to sign up, you appreciate the Bog, you appreciate what we do, and you want to help us fund and grow and, you know, make more and more content, higher quality content. And if you just love the Bog, make sure to go to patreon.com/TheBog. You can also go check out t.me/primordialpath if you want to read some of my Primordial Path excerpts and stuff like that. And go over to ariakasha.com, Tristan's organization, and nerona.org. So let's get started tonight. Let's do a quick introduction of the roundtable here.
Right. Well, I assume everyone by now knows me. I'm Tristan. And yeah, no further introductions necessary there.
I'm Ian. Local 40K nerd, I guess. Also very into European mythology and classical history. And I brought my fish companion, Andre.
Andre, residential Norwegian Warhammer nerd.
Very cool. Very, very cool. I appreciate you guys coming on, and we're gonna get right into it. So let's hop right into it, guys. One of the things that I've been fascinated with, and this is, you know, being a noob in you know, the whole world of 40K, is obviously the Primarchs. Everybody loves the Primarchs. They're sort of like the pantheon of 40K from somebody that's outside looking in, and they're starting to just get into this kind of this world, this fiction setting. So, in regards to the Primarchs, there is a big, long story and a whole bunch of stuff that unravels and has to do with the creation of the Primarchs, and we covered the Emperor himself in a previous episode. We got all into that stuff, but when it comes to the creation of the Primarchs, why they all got split up, and then the Emperor going to see them all, how did the Primarchs get created?
Well, I mean, to start, I think Tristan or Andre would probably know this better than I would, but the Emperor basically went to the planet Molech, which, you know, the nomenclature is obvious parallels and stuff, but he went there and went through a kind of warp gate, which, you know, took him to the Immaterium, where the spirit world, more or less, where he, to my knowledge, made a bargain, or, you know, maybe a false promise to the four chaos gods, the ruinous powers, Khorne, Slaanesh, Nurgle, and Tzeentch. For the knowledge and ability to create the Primarchs, who, not to correct you or nothing, but I would say rather than a pantheon, the Primarchs are kind of like a demigods and like a hero mm-hmm. cult. It's like if you look at the Primarchs as though like Hercules and Castor and Pollux and, you know, Aeneas and figures like that, like divine ancestors, sort of, they occupy that role in a sense, because, you know, the Imperium that they serve, and especially at that time by nature, was kind of atheistic and anti-religion. So they are more of like almost a hero cult, and that's really how it becomes religious, is the hero cult becomes a legitimate spiritual cult over time.
Now, I was reading about Well, actually, I was reading about it. I watched this really great video. I believe it was from the, what's his name, Luton09 or something like that. And he went all into just the creation of the Astartes, like the Space Marines themselves, and how mythical the Space Marines are to like the average people that live on these, on the many, many worlds that exist in this setting. Most people that live in the 40K setting, like if you're just an average person, never even see a Space Marine in real life, and kind of the whole process of just creating a Space Marine is really, really crazy. They, you know, they do all this surgery on them, they change them all up, they make them bigger and stronger and taller, genetically change them, and like it's really, really crazy. So what went into creating the Primarchs?
Well, they refer to it as arcane science. So it's definitely suggested that it's extreme high technology, like fantastical technology. But also there's a degree of, you know, what is more or less magic, or, you know, what they call psychic, psyker energy going into it.
There are basically two different components to how the Primarchs were made. There's the material biological components, you know, their physical bodies were shaped with genetic engineering and extreme base scientific methods that, from the dark age of technology, effectively, this, you know, the Emperor himself oversaw the project and worked on the matter. But there's also the spiritual component that in order to create a Primarch, it's not just muscles slapped onto bone and everything like that. They were beings of the warp who the Emperor took and has basically pushed them into the vessel, and that they are almost like demons of the Emperor, in a sense.
Yeah, like the greater demons, the really powerful ones like Kabanda and stuff, the Bloodthirster, the Great Unclean One, the Keepers of Secrets, the Lords of Change, they're all like... every demon is like a splinter of that god, like a bloodletter. You know, the basic cornate demon is like a small like specter of, you know, Khorne's being, but the greater demons are supposed to be, you know, larger like shards of it. Now there's still, you know, innumerable amounts of them necessarily that would go into it, you know, of these shards, especially since these beings are fueled and created by emotion. But so, you know, a cornate bloodthirster is a shard of Khorne. And, you know, the greater bloodthirsters are the only things that can kind of come close to what you might consider a god or a demigod in terms of power. So in a way, you can almost view the Primarchs, like Tristan was saying, that the Primarchs are like greater demons of the Emperor, because the Emperor basically took these very powerful warp entities and put them into biological, genetically engineered bodies for his own uses.
And like Ian was saying earlier, that's probably what the... That's probably what the bargaining with the warp that the Emperor did at Molech was about. Sorry about that, my dog in the background.
Okay. So they had this big process of being created, and there's like they started out as something like the what are they called? The Thunder Warriors or something like that. Andre, do you know about that?
Yes, the Thunder Warriors were the initial proto space marines, basically created by the Emperor, but they were suited for one single purpose, and that was the reunification of the warring states on old Terra at the time. They were, however, in some ways flash cloned. They were made fast, they were made quickly, but they were made kind of sloppily, in the sense that the old Thunder Warriors were both bigger, stronger, and more potent than even the modern Primaris Marines. But they had the drawback of being absolutely deranged after a certain amount of time and span. We're just talking about a few years. They were also incredibly aggressive, incredibly violent, and generally unstable. Ultimately, the Emperor had to refine the process and had to get rid of the Thunder Warriors and created the Astartes. And the Astartes were created from a template based upon the Primarch. So each legion of Space Marine were, in a way, distinct from each other as they were related to the Primarch. Now, it's kind of unclear what order they appeared, if the Primarchs were already underway, because it seems to be suggesting that the Astartes were already made when the Primarchs were created. But it's fully possible that the idea was already there and that the Emperor just refined the process. But instead of just focusing purely on the scientific aspect of it, he also merged the arcane with the scientific in order to create the Primarchs, which were literally larger than life figures.
That's fascinating. You know, it's really, really crazy how much goes into this whole world. But I guess it's not that far fetched considering how long this setting has been around. But it's you know, I come from, I never really got into too much sci-fi stuff. You know, I was always like a fan of Star Wars and Star Trek and some other settings and stuff like that. I guess Shadowrun. But I come from mainly medieval fantasy. I played a lot of Dungeons & Dragons, big into Forgotten Realms, you know, obviously Lord of the Rings and stuff like that. So when I get into 40K, it's shocking the amount of depth that goes into this kind of lore. Now, one of the things that I always found fascinating about kind of the entire timeline of like the creation of the Primarchs is how they were kind of all just split up and thrown throughout the galaxy. And I've never really read or heard anything that kind of explains why or how this happened. Ian, do you know anything about this?
Well, actually, the canon answer is that they don't even really know. It's just known that the powers of chaos through, you know, their demonic shenanigans took the infant Primarchs from their the laboratory beneath the Emperor's palace and cast them across the galaxy, and they all ended up on different planets. And you know, it's one of those things where it's not at all coincidence or happenstance that each Primarch kind of ends up on a planet with circumstances that forge their character. And the thing is it almost touches on the nurture versus nature debate when it comes to like raising children or, you know, rearing offspring in general. Because you know, you might say, well, if this Primarch had gone to a different world, like if Angron had ended up on Ultramar instead of Gilliman, would Angron have become like a diplomatic Caesarian Augustian type figure? I don't think so, because in each Primarch, the Emperor, like how we were saying before, that they're shards of the Emperor himself. Each Primarch kind of embodies an aspect of the Emperor. Like in Angron's case, it would be like his fury, his vengeance, like his rage. And I don't think it would have mattered what planet Angron ended up on. He would have just been a bitter, angry psychopath butcher.
Well, you know, I would actually disagree with that one, because there's a the issue that Angron got the butcher's nails planted into him, and before that he was actually a very compassionate Primarch.
Bad example.
Bad example, but for almost any of the other Primarchs, that mostly holds true.
Like, Perturabo, no matter where he landed, he would have been an autistic, whiny little idiot. Or, okay, he's not an idiot, but he's...
Brought to you by Dorngang.
Yeah, well, actually, Perturabo is a very tragic figure, in my opinion. He, a lot like Lorgar, they're both... They could have been cool, but they were emotionally immature, and for no one's fault other than their own.
Like, Lorgar is the word bearers, right?
Yes, right. He's the preachy prophet who him and his buddies pretty much kicked off the whole shebang. Yeah.
And who was the other guy you just mentioned, Perturabo?
Yeah, he's the Primarch of the Fourth Legion, the Iron Warriors. He's like a very technological, mathematically minded. Actually, the thing about him that's funny is because he ended up on a world called Olympia, and his Iron Warriors, you know, they all have each legion kind of has its own theme, usually taken from classical world history, mostly European. But the Iron Warriors are kind of quasi-Greek themed, but the interesting thing, I think, and there are some small brains who would say that this is like reading too much into it, but considering that 40K is really like an Indo-European epic set in a sci-fi space, I don't think it's out of the question. But the Greek city-state of Syracuse, for example, was known for being very intellectual, being, you know, a great haven for inventors and scientists and mathematicians. A lot of great explorers and inventors of Greek origin were from Syracuse or did their best work in Syracuse. And then there were leaders like Dionysius the First of Syracuse, you know, Dionysius the Elder, who was, you know, notoriously cruel and suspicious and vindictive. But he fostered a lot of art, like, you know, sciences and whatnot. So in a way, I see Perturabo and his Iron Warriors almost as being like a sci-fi version of the, you know, the people of Syracuse and a tyrant like Dionysius, because just those overlaps are too uncanny, in my opinion, to be a mistake or a coincidence.
Oh, absolutely. That seems like a perfect way to describe Perturabo right there.
In addition to that, I want to add that that's very apt, as I've read the book that touch upon the childhood of Perturabo, is that his father, his adoptive father, was basically a kind of like a wet-brained idiot and a tyrant. But he used Perturabo for his genius, which also, funnily enough, Perturabo was a huge fan of Leonardo da Vinci. That's canon.
Yeah, the canon is that Perturabo, and he Perturabo also liked playing Warhammer. He had the him and his legion literally played 40K as like a war game kind of thing.
Right, just to teach them how to do legion tactics and combat strategy and whatnot.
Even though their legion tactic is shell the shit out of it with artillery and send in the human waves.
Right, Perturabo is the worst sort of power gamer. He basically just makes only cheese lists.
You know what's funny is he actually plays like the cheesy 8th edition Chaos Army where it's just like all cultists and heavy artillery and demon engines.
I'm pretty sure there was a mention that he actually had like a really well painted, fully functional miniature version of a Titan.
That was true. And then I forget which one of the Primarchs it was, but he slammed their head against it and broke it.
Probably Dorn. I want to say Dorn.
So wait, they play 40K in 40K?
Iron Warriors do specifically. Yeah. Perturabo is kind of like, you know, his story is that he's very, like, he loves science and math, and like in a better world, he would have been a great inventor and like a great, you know, scientist improving people's lives through technology and engineering. But because he pretty much was made the trench master and garrison guy of the Imperium, he was really bitter that he never got to show off his genius and whatnot. And a lot of his personal habits are, you know, something we consider very like nerdy. So it's kind of funny that Perturabo is almost like a tongue in cheek reference to like the typical like angry autistic 40K player, that they're like, they're a bitter man child that, you know, is emotionally stunted and gets angry at everything and just likes to occupy themselves being by themselves doing mathematical scientific type things.
Right. So Dave, the issue with Perturabo there was that his approach to warfare was very statistical. He, you know, using his genius, he'd boil down everything into straight raw numbers. You know, like if you peek out of the barricade and shoot this guy, it has a 41% chance of succeeding, right? Mm-hmm. So he basically refined all of that down into the rules for a board game and then made his legion consistently play it in order to hone their expectations for how they behave in real life.
That's interesting. So I kind of want to go through and talk about, because everybody has like their favorite Primarch, and that there's always, every time I see like a 40K post on social media or something like that, there is a legion of neckbeards in the comments arguing viciously about who is the best Primarch, and sometimes they call each other names, and like it gets pretty brutal.
Yeah. So, we're about to call some people some names.
It's about to get heavy.
Okay, so let's do it. Let's go through who is your favorite Primarch and who is like your most hated Primarch. Let's start with Andre.
my favorite Primarch since a very long time, not since I got into 40K, but after I started reading more into it, my favorite Primarch has always been Vulcan of the Salamanders, the 18th Legion,
the black guy.
Hey, yo,
and you were the one talking about calling people names, and you open with that.
See, I'm gonna have to defend Andre here. Canonically, Vulcan is just tan.
Well, also to be fair, like the black of the Salamanders is not like Africa black. It's literally like coal black, and their eyes
right.
are red.
It's dark. It's an issue with his gene seed, so that it was a reaction to radiation. That's why I made the joke that he's literally just tan.
They look like the Dunmer from Elder Scrolls, like in terms of their skin and eyes and stuff, but they're superhumans.
Right. He has the skin of charcoal and burning red eyes, so he's not really like a person black.
Looks demonic, but he's actually a lovable Titan.
That's exactly what why I really liked Vulcan, because he's like also canonically the largest Primarch. And one of the strongest, but he's gentle. He doesn't throw his weight around. Despite the fact that he absolutely could, he doesn't do it. He serves more as a diplomat. He kind of calms situations down because he was more focused on, I guess, the human aspect of the Space Marines. He was very obsessed with the idea that Space Marines are first and foremost human. They might be superhuman, but they're still human at their core.
And rather uniquely, the Salamanders actually live and work alongside their own family even after being put in as Space Marines.
they take great pride in that, to live amongst their own kind, because it fosters a bond and an understanding. Vulcan never felt like separating the Astartes in, like, you know, spaceships or crusades or fortress monasteries was really good for their mental health regarding how they saw humans, because there was a prevalent idea that space marines saw, okay, yeah, they're humans, but we're superhuman. They're squishy, I'm not. I'm better. You guys suck. This resulted in some chapters, which should sometimes be and should sometimes not be named, Marines Malevolent being one of them, to view humans as chaff, to view them as cannon fodder, less than dirt.
Yeah.
The Salamanders never took that very kindly.
So who would you say is your most hated Primarch?
Oh, that one's difficult. But I guess a few days ago, I had a really intense rant regarding Magnus of the Thousand Sons. Because honestly, yeah, part of my reason I really hate Magnus is because so many people go around saying, oh yeah, Magnus didn't do anything wrong. Oh, he was tricked into falling for Zinch, and he was tricked to do that and that. But the guy was an incompetent buffoon.
Yeah, being an arrogant retard doesn't mean I'm not going to hate you.
Yeah, he was arrogant, he was retarded, and he just thought that he was better than absolutely every other Primarch because he knew big words that they didn't.
He did magic.
He made some really critical errors, like not listening to the Emperor and crossing Leman Russ. I mean, those are pretty much the two of them.
When a weird multicolored bird comes out of the spirit world and like starts talking to you, and you're just like, oh, hey, what up, dude? Cool. Thanks for the advice.
It's like, you know, the wisest creature in the galaxy, the Emperor of Mankind, tells Magnus, please don't fuck around with the warp. There's bad things in there. You're not prepared to meet it. And it's like, don't worry, Dad. It's fine. It's fine. And suddenly he meets an eldritch fucking squid of immortal prowess and infinite power that tells him to do something. He refuses. He's still tricked to do so. And suddenly he's a demon. And the basement of the Imperial Palace is also full of demons. And then Magnus has the audacity to say,
whoops, Dad, I fell down and accidentally sold my soul.
It was literally, oh, don't worry, Dad. Don't worry, Dad. It's going to be fine. Oh, God, please help. Dad, please help. Oh, God, I messed up. Oh, God.
It almost kind of reminds me of that scene in the old It movie where the little brother goes out to play with the boat in the rainstorm, and he starts talking to the clown in the sewer. And it's like, kid, why are you talking to a clown in the sewer? And then
that's Magnus.
Yeah, that's Magnus.
He literally talked to a clown in the sewer, except he talked to an eldritch squid in the Immaterium and thought
that
was a
rainbow bird
idea.
Head. Don't forget, it's an eldritch squid with a rainbow bird head and tentacles.
Oh, yeah, he seems like a trustworthy fellow. Wouldn't you trust him? I would trust him. Don't worry. Yeah.
So, Ian, how about you? Who's your favorite Primarch, and then who's your most hated Primarch?
Oh, boy. All right.
You hush. I'm just going to start by saying, the reason that the Primarch debate and the Space Marine Legion debate gets so heated is because 40K is one of those settings where, because of the vast amount of characters and personalities, it's very easy for people to put themselves in certain settings and places and find characters that they identify with. Kind of like in, you know, Game of Thrones, as garbage as that show became, you know, everyone's got their favorite character that they identify with and whatnot. Because it'll be briefer, I'm going to start with the Primarch that I hate the most. I would have to agree with Andre that it's Magnus for similar reasons, but since he already kind of laid that out, I'm going to go ahead and say a close runner-up is Lorgar, because basically I'm going to damn the entire galaxy because Daddy didn't pat me on the head when I built him a cathedral. And then there's simply the fact that more so than anything like that, what makes me angry with Lorgar is that most of the sins of his legion were at the hands of Erebus and Corpheron, who are his two, you know, advisors and whatnot, from even before the Emperor discovering them and whatnot.
Erebus, widely known dick.
Oh, yeah, who gets his ass beat by Karn in, like, one of the greatest scenes in literary history. But he basically, it's not even his emotional immaturity or his, you know, his arrogant ego that needed to be stroked for him to not betray his father and his brothers and whatnot. It was simply the fact that he allowed his underlings, his lesser thans, and I don't mean it like in a classist kind of way or whatever. I mean, like, literally people that he could have crushed like worms, and he let them damn his whole legion. And like, he was against it at first, but after a while, he almost seemed to give up and embrace it for the sake of knowing the quote unquote truth. But the problem with Lorgar's truth is that chaos always lies. And so he's, you know, probably least favorite after Magnus. But my favorite Primarch, perhaps controversially in some people's minds, would be the one and only greatest Primarch, Horus Lupercal, the Emperor's favored son and war master.
Like, we could tell from your icon that you have on your Google hair.
Okay, it's better than an angry dwarf, but anyway. very apt for you, though, my friend.
I identify very strongly with angry dwarves. Don't test me.
Well, I identify very strongly with basically Roman gangsters that like machine guns. Now, the thing with Horus that I like a lot is that, you know, he was kind of vanilla in the whole, oh, he's daddy's favorite war master and stuff. But when I really got into the books and started reading the background and whatnot, his fall became really tragic, because before he becomes corrupted, you see unironically, what a great guy he is. Like, he's very strong. He's very wise. He's patient with his underlings. Like, he's not really ever a dick to anyone under him, even like these small folk, like civilians that say stupid shit to him. Like, there's times in some of the books where like civilians address him inappropriately or whatever, and his boys are about ready to like shoot them in the face. And Horus is like, nah, it's okay. Like, they don't know what they're doing. And
yeah,
so
it can't really be underestimated that the first three books in the Horus Heresy trilogy about, you know, the Luna Wolves Legion there are pretty much some of the best works of fiction that have ever been written.
Yeah. I mean, when some of those guys fall, and especially, you know, reading those books and knowing what's around the corner, you just have this sense of incredible foreboding dread, like, man, this isn't going to last. Like, there's a part in there. I think it's Sanguinius, Dorne, and Horus are all meeting up after the war with the Megarachnid, and they're all like chatting and broing out. And I'm reading that scene just like, damn. Why couldn't this last?
When I first read those three books, like, I had to put it down several times. It's just like, man, is that the same Horus? Is that the one who really fell? Well, that was really well done.
It really makes you feel like Ian said, it's a very tragic story, Horus's fall.
The thing with Horus, though, too, is I almost see him as like the idealization of, or like Mars incarnate, kind of, in that, you know, he has this, you know, the god of war side, which is very appropriate. He's the war master, and he's really good at killing stuff and winning wars. But he's also very paternalistic in that, a lot like his father, well, a lot unlike his father, actually, he regards the Space Marines, the Emperor, or the Imperial Guard, the basic soldiers. He doesn't treat them like cannon fodder. He uses them that way if he needs to for tactical purposes, but he doesn't enjoy it. He feels a lot like Vulcan and a lot like Gilliman and a lot like Russ, that the Space Marines' purpose is more or less to vanguard. It's to conquer for humanity, protect humanity, safeguard the galaxy for humanity. And the impetuous, you know, everyone says, oh, Horus rebelled because daddy issues. Horus rebelled because he was basically shown a future in that he and all of his brothers and all of their men, you know, their children in quotes, are purged because, you know, oh, the crusade's over. We don't need you anymore.
Well, he saw the grim darkness of the 41st millennium and thought, oh, that's terrible.
Right. So the trick here is that chaos did show him the truth, but it showed him the truth as a result of the actions they would urge him to take. Now, the thing is that this was a lie, because yes, the Emperor did plan on the crusade ending, but the reason the Primarchs weren't just war machines like the Thunder Warriors is because they were supposed to govern. Like, the reason that Horus was war master was not just because he was a tactical genius, otherwise it could have been the Lion, but because Horus was charismatic. Horus, a lot like Gilliman, had that aspect of leadership where he actually genuinely cared about the people under him.
So real quick, okay. we have a dono real quick here. Exo donated 2 ice creams. Thank you, Exo. Appreciate you. Many blessings to you, sir.
Right on. Ice cream's great.
All right. We carry on here. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Sorry. Oh, no, it's fine. You're fine. I should probably wrap it up anyway, because I could go on about Horus forever. But so a lot of people do the whole daddy issues meme, or, you know, a lot of people, unfortunately, in 40K kind of reduce their arguments to memes. But Horus is really, like, in my opinion, the epitome of what like a king should be, and that, you know, all of his soldiers are like his, you know, his family, the citizens of his kingdom are, you know, his children. And you can see in the beginning, too, he's aware of the power of chaos, but he's wary of it. And, you know, it just makes it all the more tragic, because when you think about why did Horus fall, it's because he was pushed into a trap by that dickbag Erebus and basically wounded, you know, nearly killed. And in my opinion, at that point, possessed. Because even his own men noted that his own men, you know, his favored sons that follow him into heresy without question and whatnot, they notice that he's different. Even after like the first time he's wounded with the anathema on Davin, as soon as he comes back, they can just tell something's off. It's not, you know, it's not.
Yeah, that's the real tragic part about Horus. Out of all of the Primarchs who fell, he's the one that never really chose to fall.
Right. The rest of them were offered a choice and they did it. Usually because of their own weakness or their own temptation or their own ego, Horus literally had to be put into a coma with a demon sword to get him to turn. Which almost, I hate to maybe go there, but it almost, especially as a Horus, you know, fanboy, it almost feels kind of like rape. It's like, no, don't do that to my Primarch. Stop it. Stop it. Leave Horus alone.
We have officially me-too'd the warp gods.
In a way, I want to draw the comparison here. I don't know if it's accurate or not, but it's kind of struck me, is that the fall of Horus on Davin when he was stabbed with a dagger was... It reminds me very much of Achilles, like, you know, this immortal, undefeatable hero that was stabbed in a weak spot. And after that, he was like, you know,
a seemingly unimportant spot. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you should think that, you know, the whole dagger thing shouldn't really damage a Primarch, even if it was like tainted by the Chaos Gods. But in a way, I think Horus was shredded inside by the doubt and the visions that he saw.
Well, think about it like this, right? And I will say it's kind of funny, Andre. I think you've mentioned this before to me, but I recall it now, is that I generally like Chaos, but I really kind of hate Nurgle for no real reason. I think maybe I subconsciously kind of hate Nurgle because he's responsible for the fall of Horus. But if you think that like... What brings Horus down, for people that aren't familiar with the lore or whatever, this isn't some huge demonic sword or whatever. It's basically like to a Primarch, it's like a dagger. And this dagger is, if, you know, someone correct me if I'm wrong, but it's supposed to be like a shard of Nurgle himself. It's almost like a greater demon in the form of a dagger.
From what I understand, the anathema was a like alien work of like Dark Age tech. Like it's kind of implied that it might have some sort of warp connection, but it's...
Oh, is
a weird nefarious thing.
I thought it was like empowered by Nurgle with his very essence or something like that.
I mean, it very well might have been. I mean, it's probably the case that it was to some degree both.
Well, I think
apropos to take down a Primarch.
I think in that sense, that's if it's true. That also correct me if I'm wrong. I think there are several anathemes.
There are. There's actually one of them is in the tabletop game. You can take it for your Chaos Lord. It's not officially like declared as one of them, but it's like said that it's suspected to be one because it's like really good at wounding its target or whatever.
But from what I see, what I hear here, if it actually does, like it's a Dark Age of Technology thing, and like a creation for the Dark Age of Technology. And for those who are not aware, the Dark Age of Technology was the time period of where humanity basically ruled the entire galaxy with more or less an iron fist. They had total control over the entire galaxy, and they were able to create weapons we wouldn't even be able to conceive of, including small grenades that were able to shred entire continents. We're talking that level.
Well, and also
the anathema, if it had a warp connection, and since it was wielded on Davin by... Eugene Temba, that was a champion of Nurgle, it might have resonated more with the whole Nurgle thing. But if it was wielded by a champion of Khorne, Slaanesh, Tzinj, it would most likely have had the opposite effects. But it just so happened that the whole Nurgle thing might have been the easiest way to basically introduce it.
Consider this too, right? It's unconfirmed, like we said, but if the anathema is empowered by Nurgle, Nurgle as a psychic force empowers like depression, despair, nihilism kind of stuff. Wouldn't you agree that Horus's primary weakness and his primary like quality of corruption, you know, the black mark on his soul after he, you know, is resuscitated is the fact that he's paranoid. He sees the future as bleak. He has no hope. That's like what incites him to rebel, is the fact that he just sees such a dismal future before him. And so it's almost like, you know, if we're going with the theory that Nurgle's primarily responsible for Horus's corruption, that Horus, who was previously so known for his ambition and his energy and, you know, just his little emperor tier aura.
His zest la vie.
Yeah, exactly. It makes sense that Nurgle, as the embodiment of despair and decay, would erode his spirit into being like bitter and lashing out as like a feral dog that thinks it's gonna die in a last ditch effort. Because people think of the Horus heresy as like Horus, you know, having the upper hand, like ha ha ha, like everyone turncoated with me, you're screwed. But the Imperium, I would argue, had more might, because I think canon wise half of it, you know, roughly it's split in half roughly, but Horus has more limited resources and stuff in terms of the ability to reproduce military technology and stuff.
Yeah, Horus had a lot of time scale issues, and especially right. with the issue with the Isfahan 3 drop site massacre was basically his shot to you know, basically even the odds.
Angry Ron, that dumbass, ruined it, because instead of swiftly knocking him out and, you know, moving on to Terra, they got bogged down. And then the other thing too is the reason that Horus, you know, again, neckbeards like to say, oh, Horus is an idiot, look at what he did at Terra. He was acting in desperation. He had a very thin time frame to kill the Emperor, take Terra, and then, you know, suit up for when Gilliman and crew got there. Like, people forget that, what is it, like 4 Space Marine Legions were bearing down on Terra?
Yeah, something like that. I know it was the Ultramarines, it was the Lion, it was Russ, right? And one of the other ones, it might have been...
Blood Angels from the White Scars.
Oh, the White Stars. No, the White Stars were on Terra, dude. Yeah,
The Blood Angels, White Scars, and Imperial Fists were all at Terra.
Yeah, the White Scars were kind of a wild card because nobody assumed that they would show up, because nobody knew if Jagatai was loyal.
Well, no, they did. They, like the Dark Angels, they had their split too. The only difference is that their turncoat Marines were pretty much wiped out or surrendered and turned into suicide squads.
The Great Warhawk handled his issues.
Yup.
So let's go to Tristan here, and Tristan, tell us who your most hated Primarch, and also tell us about Leman Russ for 20 minutes.
Right. Okay, so my most hated Primarch is definitely Perturabo. I think he's a whiny, autistic little man child. This is also because I'm solidly on Dorne Gang. So basically, Perturabo is, I mean, he has sort of a basis in what he was mad about. He had a really shit hand dealt to him. He was intended to be a sort of an engineer and an analyst and a scientist who was going to go, you know, build stuff for mankind. But he got put into the selections of basically being the siege master. So what happened was that his legion were tasked to take down the greatest strongholds, and the only way they could do it was basically to brute force the method. They took all the casualties, they took all the shit, took all the, you know, all the bad shit that goes into a siege. The meat grinder of a siege, really. And then what would commonly happen is some other legion would show up at the last moment and help them assault the place and then to steal all the glory. And that he was constantly feeling like he never got any sort of recognition, basically. All the Imperium didn't really notice that he existed, or if they did, they just put him in, like, some other dude's shadow. And especially his rivalry with Rogel Dorne is that Dorne was basically renowned for doing all the things that he wished he himself could do, even though they were more or less identical talent-wise.
The problem with Perturabo, really, is that he did have a legitimate grievance, but what he needed to do was kind of accept that almost older brother mentality and understand that you have to do some stuff that's not so fun that you don't like for the good of the family. You know, like, mom and dad can't be home right now, so you got to take care of the brothers and sisters.
That's exactly why I dislike Perturabo so much, is because out of a Primarch, you would expect a Primarch to understand the basic stuff, yeah, like yeah, like your basic duty and that this isn't going to last forever. But no, yeah. He had to fall like a spoiled man child.
Well, no, like if he had just chilled the fuck out, he would have understood once the crusade is over, my dad is literally going to make me like engineer in chief.
Like, right, you can build as many cities as you want to after that. Right now we're doing the duty.
And instead, he's like a drooling obliterator retard that lives in a giant spiky fortress that Dark Eldar would be envious of.
I have to say, though, obviously, when it comes to Perturabo, he had probably like what I want to call the weakest fall of them all. Because usually you can point to that one moment in the history of the Horus Heresy where, you know, the Primarch just cracks. And for some people, it's really understandable. For some Primarchs, it's really understandable. Like your Lorgar, when he was humiliated in front of the Gilliman and the Emperor, or Horus, like his fall off the fall on Davin, or Angron's butcher's nail, like shit they didn't have any control over.
And Perturabo into the rock.
Yes,
right. All the other ones had some sort of grand psychological issue, or they were tricked by a demonic entity that they were unprepared for. Perturabo was basically just ass mad.
Yeah, Perturabo, they pulled a joke on Perturabo. Someone just cheekily mentioned, hey, Rogel Dorn, do you think you could make a fortress that even Perturabo couldn't take, you know, friendly brother banter? And Rogel Dorn, being slightly autistic himself and not being able to tell a lie, like, you know, 40K George Washington,
he did the chat, yes.
Yeah, he just said, yes. And Perturabo stormed out of the room and afterwards swore to defeat, humiliate, and grind the Imperial fists down to a sludge because of a joke. That was Perturabo's fall.
That's like, again, Perturabo is like the pinnacle, like angry neckbeard, like, oh, you humiliated me, so I'm going to tip my fedora and plot revenge. It's like, dude, it's not
that. You guys know that meme with the Scottish guy from the Simpsons where it's, you've suddenly made an enemy of everyone? That's
Willie, yeah.
Bravo.
Yeah. I like Willie, though. He's funny.
And going on, I suppose, to the greatest of all Primarchs, we will discuss the Wolf King.
Second greatest.
The greatest of all canine-based Primarchs.
Whoa, hold up. I'm pretty sure a Luna Wolf is better than a Space Wolf, bro. I'm pretty sure that Mars is cooler.
I'm pretty sure that space is bigger than the moon, but, you know,
I was just about to say that, logically the moon is in space.
What cosmological entity or stellar body inspired man to ascend to the stars? The moon, bitches. JFK, go to the moon. Beat the Soviets. Dunzo.
I mean, JFK did get shot in the head, though.
Yeah, he probably should have worn a helmet or something.
Right. Oof.
Hey, JFK, boys with a time machine. Hey, John, maybe wear this motorcycle helmet. Why? It's a new style. You want to be a trendsetter, don't you?
So anyway, I always like... Leman Russ, because, and so many people have these weird conceptions of Leman Russ because they've basically only known the guy from memes and whatnot, because a lot of people have an issue with how he was favored by the Emperor and they're super mad about it.
He's a furry Ragnar, right?
Right. Pretty much memes like that, right? Yeah. They have an issue with the fact that Leman Russ was treated favorably and special, that he was the Emperor's executioner.
But he did his duty without question.
That's the great thing about Leman Russ, is that out of all the Primarchs, he understood exactly what the purpose of a Primarch was. He wasn't really a man. He was a weapon who was designed to serve the Emperor and mankind, regardless of his any feelings on the subject.
Tristan,
and actually, yes.
Do you remember, I hate to interrupt you, bud, but do you remember, I think it's Karn, he's talking to a member of the Space Wolves, and he's talking about how it's ironic that his legion is called the Warhounds when they're like kind of the wild beast legion, and that the Space Wolves are called the Space Wolves when in fact they're kind of the trained dog legion. Do you remember who was that conversation?
I do remember that. That was during the Night of the Wolf.
Who was he talking to? I don't remember.
He was talking to, I'm not even sure at this point. It was one of the leaders of the great companies.
Yeah, I think so. Go on. I'm sorry.
It might have been Bjorn, actually.
Oh, I'm going to look it up.
Right, but anyway, He's actually kind of right that the Liebenrust subordinated himself to his liege, his father, the emperor, in all things. So that if his duty was to go kill even one of his brothers, Liebenrust swallowed his feelings and just did it. He was a weapon, first and foremost, and he made himself into the perfect weapon. A weapon doesn't have feelings, it doesn't have thoughts, it slices when its master wields it. And in this sense, it's actually very close to some ideas of Zen Buddhism that, you know, you get like the warrior monks and everything. People think like Buddhists aren't supposed to kill, or their actual ideology is that if they divorce themselves from feelings or humanity or, you know, anything attachment in that sense, that they can become a perfect weapon for their liege, that it's almost a warrior's nirvana. And that is exactly what Liebenrust was, and that is exactly what he did during the heresy. But not only that, Liebenrust is also one of the most compassionate and intelligent Primarchs, which is very odd because he portrays himself as being a barbarian king in order to basically get one up on his enemies that think him too simple.
It's a good tactic. Oh, go ahead. I mean, if people underestimate you because they think you're just like a knuckle-dragging barbarian, then you can outwit them, well, like you proved with Angron.
One of the things that really impressed me, because I will admit that in the beginning, I kind of saw... Liebenrust wasn't really prominent in the first novels of the Horus Heresy, so I just thought that, okay, yeah, he's just like... He is this knuckle-dragging barbarian king. But after more I read about it, the more I realized, and misunderstand me wrong here, but the guy was basically a calculated dumbass. Like, he pretended to be an absolute buffoon and a dumbass and basically like a wild, chaotic, idiotic barbarian. And then suddenly, his eyes light up and he gets this absolute shit-eating grin and pulls some absolutely horrendously intellectual stuff out of nowhere that even baffled people like Magnus.
Because
that's
poetry.
The reason why I hate Magnus so much, is because he thought himself so much more intelligent than especially Liebenrust, because he hated Liebenrust. But Liebenrust was intellectually superior to Magnus in basically every way, no matter what. Like in every regard. Like, the guy knew about the warp, but he was also intelligent enough not to fuck around with it.
See, one of my favorite parts about Liebenrust is when he's fighting with Angron during the Night of the Wolf, and Angron is going on his rant about how he doesn't really know why he's even fighting for the Emperor or what they're fighting for. He's just a tyrant. And Liebenrust delivers this grand political and philosophical soliloquy, basically, where he starts quoting Lorgar's works on philosophy and religion about the human spirit and why they fight, and the nature of humanity. And it's at that point the veil sort of drops that Liebenrust isn't this knuckle-dragging brute. He's actually a very intelligent, educated, philosophical person.
It's like if some biker dude you were talking to at a bar just started like quoting some Roman poet like Livy and just started going on. You'd be
right, yeah, exactly like that.
Yeah, actually, I found the quote I was talking about that really highlights, you know, talking about Angron and, Rus, if you don't mind me reading it, it's pretty brief.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Says he, you know, regarding the Emperor, and this is Karn the Betrayer speaking, he says, he needed a weapon that would never bite the hand that feeds. The world eaters were not that weapon. We've all drawn blades purely for the sake of shedding blood, and we've all felt the exultation of winning a war that never even needed to happen. We are not the tame, reliable pets that the Emperor wanted. The wolves obey when we would not. The wolves can be trusted when we never could. They have a discipline that we lack because their passions are not aflame with the butcher's nails buzzing in the back of their skulls. The wolves will always come to heel when called. In that regard, it is a mystery why they name themselves wolves. They are tame, collared by the Emperor, obeying his every whim. But a wolf does not behave that way. Only a dog does. That is why we are the eaters of worlds and the warhounds no longer.
And he sort of has a point there, though I would that... A wolf naturally subordinates itself to its pack leader, who is the greatest of them. And who is the greatest of all, except the Emperor?
But that is literally also Liebenrust's foundation story, at least back in 5th edition Codex. It was Liebenrust, you know, almost in a mirror of the classical, Thor and Loki go to Utgard. You know, they get to Utgard after this journey, and then Utgard Loki, the king of the giants there, he puts these tasks, you know, almost like Herculean labors sort of before Thor and his companions, you know, to earn their keep and whatnot. And so Russ challenges the stranger, the emperor, to these, you know, a drinking contest, an eating contest, and a, you know, combat at arms trial. And the emperor bests, or he gets out eaten and out drank by Leman. But then in the combat, which is ferocious and very equal, the emperor finally beats him. And then Russ is like, all right, you know. And I understand that attitude completely, because, like, in my youth, when, you know, I was a bit of a rougher character, I remember literally getting into like a drunken brawl with a friend of mine, and he unironically kind of bent my nose up and fucked me up a bit. But we both kind of came out of that, like, you know, a little worn for wear. And I thought to myself, you know, I like him. He's a good friend. Like, I don't know. It's just kind of like this innate. I think it's part of, legitimately, I'm going to spurg out about wolf warband cults for a second. The wolf cult warband is intrinsic to the Indo-European religious, you know, young male spirituality. I think there's something in our brains, some kind of pack hierarchy, that if your friend kicks your ass, yeah, there's a moment of shame because you had a drunken brawl and, you know, you lost. But then there's the kind of thing where it's like, okay, like, he's, you know, the quote, like, the subconscious leader now, and I'm cool with that because I was more or less put in my place. And it's not like a submission thing where it's like, oh, he beat me up, I do what he says. It's like, oh, I trust you to make a good call because you bent my nose that one time.
Like, you were serious enough to fight me for your right to.
Yeah. And it's like,
to do
it's
so.
It's like in a dog or a wolf sense, it's like, I lost that fight. So it's like, I don't really have a right to challenge you unless I want to scrap again. And most of the time, because people, you know, you don't want to fight with your friends too much because then you might not be friends. But there is that element to it, I think.
I would also say
almost uniquely amongst animals, humans tend to fight rather often amongst themselves in a tribal setting, but rarely to any sort of lasting harm or desired like end to the conflict. Like, you're never going to try to kill your own tribe mate over it. And that's rather unique amongst animals. Most of the time, any sort of challenge like that happens, it's to the death. And it's because, you know, like, the lion is trying to take the place of the king.
Well, the fun thing is actually is that herbivores actually generally kill each other more often than predators do, because, you know, usually over, you know, mating competitions. But, like, I mean, people have all seen those memes and pictures of, like, you know, deer that, you know, rip another deer's head off, locking antlers, and then have the severed deer head hanging off their antlers. I mean, anyone that lives in the woods or out in the middle of nowhere can tell you that deer fucking murder each other.
They murder humans, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
they are not the cute little Bambi. Do not try to pet a deer. Yeah.
Where I'm from, always, in Pennsylvania, the white-tailed deer kills more people than all other animals.
Oh.
We have
Nationwide, it's true. If you include Lyme disease and automobile accidents, they kill the most amount of people every year in North America.
Well, it's like one of those, like, typical, like, fun meme stats that get thrown around, that more people gets kicked to death by horses and cows than get killed by sharks, wolves, and lions combined. It's an idea that we have that predators are these ferocious, mindless, sociopathic animals that just needs to kill for fun, but that's mainly just cats.
No, you're right. I mean, actually, a lot of songbirds and, like, little lizards, like what we'd almost call garden ecosystems, are being totally screwed because people just let house cats do whatever. And I was going to say about, you heard talking about predators being seen in a malevolent light. I do wolf conservation stuff, because I really care about wolves. I think they're an important part of, you know, human culture, you know, ecological systems. And I think they're important to the character of the Western, you know, North American continent in particular. Mm-hmm. But I've encountered a lot of, and, you know, I love guns. I have several. I like to hunt. I like wilderness stuff. I'm not at all, like, I'm an environmentalist, but I'm not at all one of these hippy dippy watermelon retards that's green on the outside and red on the inside. Mm-hmm. I really dislike how much straight up antagonism I've seen in, like, in the hunting community towards wolves. Like, I see, you know, stuff about Mexican wolves, and I see all these people just saying SSS, which is shoot, shovel, shut up, which is basically poach, and then, you know, bury it so no one finds out about it. And most of the time, what really gets me is that these aren't even people that are from here, because, you know, where I live, there's a huge transplant problem. It's not even like, oh, you know, like people lived here for a long ass time without hunting everything to extinction. But now that we have all these people moving in from, like, Chicago and Boston and New York, all these urban kind of areas east of the Mississippi, they all come out here and all of a sudden, you know, wolves can't exist, mountain lions are dangerous. Like, they have these very exterminationist policies towards predators. And, you know, as someone from the, you know, pew pew Wild West, it's like, no, 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 don't come here with your sedated urban shit and try to exterminate all the wild things about where I live and make it into another damn strip mall.
Have but, to kill all the wolves and the mountain lions because they make your tummy weird.
Yeah. No, said, no, straight up, people, the number one thing about why they hate wolves and want them dead is, this is why I can only get one elk tag a year. It's like, oh, okay, let's genocide a species because you want to kill more elk, you piece of shit. But moving on, I don't want an eco-terrorist post, so.
Yeah, I'm more than fine with eco-terrorist posting. Because, like, as I said, though, like, for instance, if you, like, the most horrific example I can think of is something like Africa. Because, like, the most dangerous animal in Africa, apart from mosquitoes because of malaria, are humans. Elephants and hippos.
Yeah.
Over hippos humans.
But, gnarly, dude.
Yeah, but, like, it's not the lions. It's not the hyenas. It's not even the large crocodiles. Predators they have. The crocodiles are pretty docile as long as you don't get close to them. But a hippo, he's going to mess you up.
Like those charge people from like 50 yards away.
Yeah. Elephants trample villages out of pure spite and revenge.
That's kind of hilarious, though. Imagine like a bunch of like Kenyans all like oobagood boogading because like an elephant just like crushed their little stick.
There was a case where there was an African poacher that killed an elephant, like an elephant calf. And this tribe of elephants gathered three or four other elephant tribes and communicated with them to trample, like literally, like trample 13 different villages out of pure spite and revenge in the middle of the night.
Awesome. I love that. Do you remember mammoths did that shit? Like back in the day, like Siberian hunters killed a mammoth castle, like mammoth gang rolls up in their little frozen village.
They probably did because mammoths were probably more intelligent than African elephants were.
Oh, and on the subject of mammoths real quick, as an aside, I believe that our Hyperborean ancestors used to ride mammoths like we do horses. Andre thinks that's fantastical and stupid. I think Andre's
Honestly, knowing human psychology, some retard probably tried at least once.
Would have been me. Hey, hold my meat. You think I can get on that there mammoth?
All right, well, we're starting to go over an hour. You guys want to hear my favorite and most hated?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I want to hear how much you love Horace.
Okay, so I'm not like you guys. I don't have in-depth knowledge of all of these Primarchs and stuff like that. I just kind of have like an idea of who they are and just, you know, I just have like very surface knowledge. So from what I could tell, number one, the one that I don't like, I don't like Fulgrim just because he's a Fanook. You know what I mean? He's kind of, you know what I mean? He's like Brokeback Mountain kind of guy. Like if, you know, you go to his house and you like drink too much beer and pass out, you're going to wake up.
Oh, no.
You're going to wake up with a condom
As the con once said, I've heard you do funny things to your men.
You're giving him too much credit, man. No, you're giving him way too much credit. Like Brokeback Mountain, like that's at least got the falsehood of masculinity. Fulgrim is just straight up like NYC art student. Like no facade.
He
at
reminds
all.
Me of like Milo Yiannopoulos or something. Yeah. You
know what I mean? Because he's like fashy and rainbow. That's funny.
Yeah, he's just like he's obnoxious. He's like bourgeois, and I want to throw him in the bog.
There's a part in a book where he literally wants to tell Perturabo something, but he won't tell him until Perturabo's built him an entire amphitheater for him to make this announcement.
Yeah,
and he also he fell to Slaanesh, right? Which is like the tranny demon, right?
Yeah, the god of like
excess
and depravity.
They're probably
sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
They're basically probably doing Fanook stuff in whatever Slaanesh's realm is.
Right? They're actually doing that. It's canon. They have torture.
That's disgusting.
Well, he literally turned into like a horny snake demon. So like, he's like the
Southeast Asian the Naga. You know, the serpentine entities. He's like a demonic version of that, but he's got like tits and straight up, I forget the source, but it basically says that in his like his own demon world is like a pleasure palace, and it's full of like demonettes and like his own male space marines that he keeps around for pleasure.
Ah,
I mean, it's they don't spell it out what it is, but it's Dark Angels.
That's definitely, yeah, it's Dark Angel shit.
I mean, draw upon like Warhammer Fantasy lore, Fulgrim was too basically, to summarize, he was too much like Sigvald the Magnificent for me to handle.
Sigvald is like a really angry, incestuous Joffrey Baratheon.
Yeah, but that's the thing, though. Fulgrim was also angry, jealous, and spiteful. He was acting like a fucking woman in Tar Heresy.
I don't know. I feel like Sigvald is more Joffrey Baratheon, and Fulgrim is more like Lindsay Lohan in Mean Girls.
Yeah, but if you gave Sigvald the Magnificent power armor and infinite power, like that's you end up with Fulgrim.
What would happen if you put Lindsay Lohan in power armor? Would that be like a force too terrifying even for Chaos?
Perturabo.
So, Dave, tell us about your favorite Primarch.
My favorite Primarch. I got two that I. There's a few that I kind of like. You know, I mean, I like kind of like the runner ups. I like. Let me think. Also, I don't really. Yeah, here's the thing. At first, I hated Lorgar until I started to read about him, and the Emperor really just like shattered his world and embarrassed him, humiliated him. So I was like, you know what? I could kind of see why he flipped out. You know what I mean? Like,
it was over the top. It was kind of unnecessary to shame him like that.
And even though he's kind of a douchey limp wrist himself, he was really brilliant with the philosophy and stuff like that. So
yeah.
I no longer hate Lorgar. You know what I mean?
One of my favorite Laban Russ quotes is talking about all the Primarchs he could beat, and when he gets to Lorgar, he says, "I could spit on that one," and he'd drop.
Yeah.
Well, even his own men don't respect him. There's a part where Argal Tal and Karn, the Betrayer, you know, best bromance ever. Like, he's literally telling him, or no, he's telling an Ultramarine, I think. He's telling him, like, you know, you can be proud of your Primarch because he's a great warrior. Ours is basically a doddering philosopher, but we ourselves are warriors, and this is our example, this dude, the preacher.
Well, it's even like the modern Wardbearers, like even modern and during the Horus Heresy, the Wardbearers were basically split between those who were loyal to Lorgar and those who were loyal to Erebus and Cor Ferron, the original gay parents, basically.
Lorgar tried to usurp Horus. I mean, he orchestrated a plot to basically assassinate him and take his place as Warmaster. And that makes me, like, I understand what you're saying, Dave, but I hate Lorgar perpetually because of, you know, aforementioned reasons. But also, it's like, you tried to usurp my horse, you stack of shit.
And then another one that I kind of like is the Raven guy. What's his name? Corvus.
Corvus.
Yeah,
Corvus Korax.
He's okay. And my two favorites, though, I like Lionel Johnson, and I like Sanguinius. Those are my two favorites.
Who doesn't like Sanguinius, though?
Sanguinius is the man.
Sanguinius is like Johnny from Karate Kid, but like in a realistic, not lame telling of that story.
He's basically like Jesus, so he's like the Jesus figure of the whole setting. He's literally
Jesus,
like
Cesare Borgia and Apollo.
You're not allowed to pick Sanguinius as your favorite Primarch. It's cliche to pick the Great Angel at this point.
is that cliche?
Yeah, but it's like
it's cliche.
I don't know if you guys are memeing or not. I don't think it is. I think
seriously, it is because like most people are like they have a favorite Primarch, but like they cannot put Sanguinius in that competition because he just blows the competition out of the water because likes Sanguinius.
The entire point of Sanguinius is that he was a perfect person and then he died for humanity. And that's his story. I mean, you can't really do much more than that.
Well, yeah. The thing too that sucks about Sanguinius's death is, you know, and people like to forget this or they like to unfortunately go to Reddit and meme it into erotic fan fiction. Sanguinius was the most beloved Primarch of Horus. Like, of all of his brothers, Horus loves Sanguinius the most because part of Horus's, you know, doubt and his fall is that he thinks that Sanguinius should be the War Master.
Yeah,
he
that's true.
Also too, though.
He thinks of all of them best characterizes the Emperor completely. Like, all of them are shards of the Emperor, but Sanguinius is, like, the most of him in one. And really, I would say that Sanguinius and Horus-led Imperium would have been pretty cool. Very sad we didn't get to see it.
So, and then my favorite one so far is probably Lionel Johnson. I just like the guy. I think
it's a good
Lionel Johnson was a solid one, actually. Honestly, I kind of liked him.
he gets memed a lot, but it's not really fair. I mean, there's a part where, you know, everyone says he's a traitor and stuff. There's a part in one of the books where he just kicks the shit out of Conrad Kurz, and he's just like, loyalty is its own reward. When you basically delivers this great speech saying, I'm loyal because I'm not an asshole. Like, you know, I fulfill my purpose as a Primarch, as a, you know, quote unquote, son of the Emperor.
That's another one. I don't like Conrad Kurz.
Conrad Kurz was.
He's like the Hot Topic kid one, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly. My Chemical Romance.
Yeah, Primarch. He's a douche. That guy sucks.
To go back to the initial point, like with the whole nature nurture thing, Conrad Kurz was one of those really interesting figures. I never liked him because he was basically a deranged, sweaty goblin throughout the entire existence. But also, he tortured my main man Vulcan. I can never forget that. I can never forget that. The entire aspect of Conrad was really interesting because he seemed to be pre-programmed with this idea of justice above all, but he was placed in a world that literally didn't have any sort of justice whatsoever. Nostromo was the name of the world. Everything was basically shit, terrifying and terrible, and even like way too grimdark, even for 40K, was like way over the top. Everybody was a psychopath and raping each other left and right and whatever.
It's like, because, you know, people say, like, you know, they joke that he's the Batman Primarch, and that's kind of true.
Well, but he's Batman without a moral compass.
Well, no, but Nostromo as a planet is a lot like Gotham City in that setting, because it's, like, literally just this amoral shithole where, like, all the, you know, what would be police are totally corrupt. They're basically just an extortion racket and, you know, thugs. Everyone's raping and murdering each other, you know. Everyone's a drug addict. Like, this is a planet in perpetual night, and everyone's morality is perpetual night. There is a scene, I forget where from, but there's a woman that's going to kill herself because her husband is dead, and Conrad Kurz goes to murder her, and he basically tells her, like, you know, you, by taking the course to commit suicide, are committing a great injustice. You know, you're committing self-murder, and, you know, I have to punish you for that. So he kills her brutally slow with, like, a dull knife.
To be honest, I kind of understand where he's coming from point.
He's entirely correct. That's the thing.
He's basically saying, like, you're going to kill yourself anyways. Obviously, you want to die, so it doesn't really matter if I, like, skin you alive. You want to die, so what's the problem?
You get to die and
at least now your death will serve a purpose.
Yeah.
But Conrad was in some ways complicated, but he turned into a complete deranged goblin.
Conrad is another one of those really tragic Primarchs, because the entire time you see, like, the dark reflection of what he could have been.
He wanted to be just, and he was just, but he turned it up to 11 and then to 12. And that's why he also kidnapped Vulcan, because he felt like Vulcan was the epitome, like, he was the opposite of Conrad, in that sense that he was good no matter what. And he wanted to punish Vulcan and show Vulcan that, aha, if you turned out like me, if you grew up and had to make choices like me, you'd also turn into a terrible person. But Vulcan never did, and that pissed him off. And then Vulcan beat the shit out of him with a hammer.
It's also a hammer.
Yes. No, remember? Oh, you forget. This teleporter? It's also a hammer. And then he one-shotted Conrad, which is also why I love Vulcan so much.
But the thing with Kurz is that his fall happens after he goes back to his homeworld, because he leaves it in, like, a super strict, you know, almost like police state kind of thing. He goes on the crusade, does his terror tactics thing for like a century.
He never did, actually. He never put people in, like, a position to actually do a police state. He just left and thought that fixed the problem.
He left his code behind and told them to follow it and expected them to do so, because he promised them that he'd come back and fuck them up if they didn't. And then he came back and they had resumed their old lifestyle. And so he just, like, started slaughtering them and hanging their flayed corpses from streetlights and stuff.
Also, I'd argue that Conrad actually, like, never truly fell, because he became disloyal. But he never went full chaos. He went renegade instead, which is a distinction.
Even in the 41st millennium, the Night Lords are an independent renegade faction. They're not a chaos marines.
All right, fellas. We are well over an hour. We do have to shut it down. I have a couple more donations I want to read out. White Healing sends 3 ice creams and 2 lemons. Thank you very much to White Healing. Many blessings to you, sir. And
the Emperor protects.
The Emperor protects. So let's close it out here. We are 1:15, and I gotta go get something to eat. And we'll see you guys next week. But in closing, do you guys have anything in closing you'd like to say?
I would like to say that Lehman Russ is definitely better than Horace.
Okay.
I would like to say that Horace and Lehman Russ are two parts of the same metaphorical wolf, and that they embody different aspects of the Indo-European wolf cult warrior society, and they have their respective balances that I think is fascinating.
They're like the horse twins, but the wolf twins.
Yeah.
That is actually fair.
Like Lehman is the wild and good one, and Horace is the civilized one that ultimately falls. But yeah.
And I would like to say that Horace and Lehman Russ are both wolf enthusiasts and nothing else, and Vulcan lives.
You are so lame.
All right, very cool. Thank you guys so much for coming on. This was a lot of fun, really great. And thank you to everybody that tuned in. Many thanks, many blessings, many hails to each and every one of you. So make sure to go to facebook.com/IronAgeJodish to check out some Vedic astrology. Make sure you tell them Big Dave sent you. And also, if you like the Bog, you want to support the Bog, you can go sign up at our Patreon. We have a Patreon now. That's pretty moving up in the world, collecting them shekels. So go to patreon.com/the Bog and go check out the tiers and stuff. We're gonna have some merchandise up very, very soon. And also go check out ariakasha.com to check out Tristan and Kerwin's work over at ariakasha. Check out nerona.org. We're gonna be back with another Warhammer Boghammer 40k very, very soon. It's we don't have a set schedule for it yet, but we will be back with a regular episode of the Bog next week. Next Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on DLive.tv/Dave Martell, or you can check all of our replays over on my YouTube channel, which is just Dave Martell. You can check that out. So I'll see you guys next week. Hail the gods and hail the folk. Hail the Emperor.